The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And then the true loyalty is built on a sequence of mutually beneficial transactions. The more transactions you have, the more interactions you have, the more opportunities either to become more loyal or less, right? So rather than being very transactional, they end up being something that happens over a period of time and is often tested. And that then results in this thing called brand equity.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I'm so glad you're here. I empower leaders to turn indifferent customers into loyal fans. I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights and wisdom. We give you practical tips and proven frameworks and share ways to help you delight your customers. Well, I am so excited to have my guest on the Delighted Customers Podcast show, Valerie Peck. Valerie is the founder of Sweet CX, one of the most respected and fantastic journey. It's way more than a journey mapping software application. It really helps organizations connect the dots when it comes to understanding journey mapping and journey mapping orchestration. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's great to have you. One of our industry luminaries who's been around for a long time, way smarter than me. I'm so honored to have you on the show. But what you built is something that I sure wish I had when I was doing journey mapping the manual way.
Yeah, don't we all? Well, my closet is full of butcher paper and sticky notes.
There you go. You know, schlepping the roll and all the sticky notes and the markers and the pens and all that stuff. But today we're gonna jump right into a topic that we have in all the episodes I've done, I've not jumped into, and it's something that is part of the course that I'm teaching at Michigan State University, customer relationship management. And one of the aspects of it, which has really become controversial lately on many levels from a company and from a customer standpoint, is this idea of loyalty programs, right?
Absolutely. And defining loyalty and what is going on in the world is also fascinating because it has ramifications across not only the business side, but also in so many other political ways today.
Exactly. So, this is one of those podcasts where I'm going to share some visual. The podcasts will be available on video, but you'll be able to follow us along just fine on audio if you choose to. I just put together a slide here based on one of the rankings, and we can talk about what this kind of all means or it doesn't mean when it comes to ranking loyalty programs, right? But there's Frontier Airlines is on there, Target, BJ's, Alamo, Buffalo Wild Wings, Amazon, all for their different respective categories. And you may or disagree, and that was just one set of criteria. This particular study was the Newsweek 90. It was done by Statistica. It had 4,000 customers, and I'm pretty sure it was all B2C. But they judged it on, you know, did you find the loyalty program worthwhile? And then what I would call a SAT. Satisfaction score, and then NPS, likely to recommend. So that was this particular one. But say more about the dimensions of loyalty programs from these different perspectives. Like, what does it mean?
Sure. So literally for every loyalty program, there's a different definition. They probably have a very similar desired outcome, which is repurchase. But loyalty is far more of an emotional thing than it is an action. And if you look at some of these logos here, I'll pick out Expedia. Somebody who becomes loyal to Expedia may actually be disintermediating the actual person or company that they want to have loyal, say a Marriott. Because if you book on Expedia, Marriott won't give you points. So now I'm having to choose between the two, which is a really interesting thing that people don't think a lot about, right? Airlines, there's been tons of front headlines, in especially for business travelers, around Delta of late. And to its credit, they stepped into it a little bit on their loyalty program, and then they backed off of it because they realized that their customers weren't happy with it. So each of these different programs, again, has the objective of trying to make you stickier or to buy more. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, so so that's a great point. And boy, it not only sometimes doesn't work, it ends up in headlines in the newspapers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And well, people, we are feeling creatures who can think. And loyalty plucks some of those strings, right? So loyalty is more of a process and a program as compared to a specific thing. Again, trying to pluck the strings of having someone, I'm sure you see bumper stickers and comments in social media, because loyalty really does create a opinion which sometimes is not necessarily the one you expected. So, you know, it really does result in giving you a lot of information. I think probably Net Promoter Score would apply to the very first one there. Understanding transactions, your customer demographics or firmographics, all of that information gets pulled in when you do a Net Promoter Score program, right? Which is, again, tied to loyalty. There's a lot of different groups that act differently within your own company. So those would be segments. Some people are digitally forward, some people are not. So how are you going to actually get them to come into a loyalty program and act? And then the true loyalty is built on a sequence of mutually beneficial transactions. The more transactions you have, the more interactions you have, the more opportunities either to become more loyal or less, right? So rather than being very transactional, they end up being something that happens over a period of time and is often tested. And that then results in this thing called brand equity. And brand equity often ties to shareholder value, to long-term value and revenue from a particular group of customers. Or it can also fall off, as we saw in some of the recent issues with Delta.
So a couple of things you said that I want to just double click on, and one call out what I call gems on when we're talking with guests on the show, is often you can kind of roll past something and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, that was a gem right there. We need to make sure people heard that. I don't want to, we talk a lot about the, well, customer experience, you know, often a Gartner has said it's about not what happened, but the perceptions of what customers think happened. And to your point about emotions, and that applies, as your point is, that applies to loyalty programs as well. I think sometimes companies get their saliva flowing, right, when they say, oh, loyalty program, I can manage customers in a way that they'll be loyal to us if we set up this program. And what you're saying is, number one, you need to be strategic about it when you think about how it's designed, right?
Absolutely. Because loyalty can be confused for trapped, right? COVID, I'm trapped at home. I use Amazon. I start using Amazon more and more. Amazon thinks I'm loyal. I'm trapped. Right? So there's a lot of nuances for loyalty. And we talked earlier about credit card programs. Some retailers call their credit card program a loyalty program. Why? I don't know, right? They think that if you use their credit card more often, you're more loyal, and it may really be just they're getting a discount. So, you know, every act of marketing and sales, right, should drive revenue. The whole purpose of a loyalty program is to drive repurchase, and people forget that. Right? Because you can be really, really loyal. And again, I'm loyal to a couple of fabulous retailers that I used all the time when I was in the Bay Area. Now that I've moved out into the sticks here, they're not here anymore. And true, I could use them online, but that wasn't the relationship I had with them. I had a relationship with a personal buyer. So what they thought was loyalty was a relationship I had with a personal buyer, right? Right. So you have to really be careful about that. You can't tie things to discounting and coupons, right? Whole different program, right? Your customers' expectations are different when you're actually throwing discounts and coupons at them. And they may indeed find that if they get trapped into that, and that's a death spiral. You know, as you well know, couponing can be really dangerous for the revenue and profit margin of a company. And a loyalty program should actually act as the opposite of that, that if you raise your prices, I stay loyal, as compared to being tied to discounting, right? That is really, it's one of the key things here in managing loyalty. You don't want to marginalize that product or service value, right? You want the program to be actually additive instead of subtractive, right? I don't think subtractive is the word, but it works. Right.
No, right? It's funny. It's funny you mention extracting value. If it doesn't go the way it's supposed to, one of the companies, and I didn't put it on the front page for a reason, that one, its category was Bed Bath and Beyond.
Oh yeah.
And you talk about maybe a discounting program disguised as a loyalty program.
Those 20% coupons. Right. I guarantee you, people probably have curated 20 different emails so that they could sign up and get 20% off.
Just to double click on your point is, in the textbook we use for the class, it talks about not thinking about a discounting or a promotional program as a loyalty program. They serve two different functions, and the sales or promotions that have to do with discounting and coupons, et cetera, are more transactional in nature and temporary, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at, again, places like Macy's and others that do those loss leaders, Bed Bath & Beyond, huge loss leaders, what happens if you actually look at the data is that you're cannibalizing a lot of good customers because they come in, buy that particular element, and then they leave, right? So right. You have to be both proactive and reactive as you're going through, is that ideally the rewards for loyalty would be something, for example, if you were a retailer, being able to interact with the buyers and say, this is what I'd really like for the fall season or whatever. Nordstrom's did a really good job of that, right? They gave incentives of becoming more engaged as part of the loyalty program, as compared to making them coupon and discount, right? So you have to keep that balance, as it were, constantly as you go through your different programs. And you have to keep your segments, meaning a loyalty segment as well as a behavioral segment or a value segment, all tied together, and really do a lot more testing and understanding of what their needs and behaviors are, as compared to the simple drop a coupon or have a call to action on social media where you get a discount, right? So even companies, you know, brilliant companies like Walmart, who really understand where a product would be sold or undersold in one region and really attractive in another, you have to keep all of that data flowing as well, because that doesn't necessarily tie to loyalty. And again, as we said, you can muddy up the field pretty quickly if you're not looking at these in an integrated fashion.
Yeah, such a good point. And one of the things that you alluded to is this idea of segmentation and really understanding, you know, what's going to drive customer loyalty? What are the drivers of loyalty? If you've got customers that are already going to commit and buy, and as you say, purchasing, repeat purchasing behavior, because your point is the attitudes are great, but really it's the behavior that we're going after in terms of what we mean by loyalty. You know, if you're going to just give something to people who are already going to have repeat purchasing behavior, it's really not adding value. Maybe adding value to the customer. It's not really adding value to the company.
Right. It erodes your profitability.
It erodes your profitability.
Interestingly enough, I did a project for the people who actually bought Bed Bath & Beyond. We did a segmentation project for Overstock. And they were really, really laser focused on margin. They knew who their best customers were for every line of business they had. And they didn't mistake the fact that the grandmother from Long Island who bought a lot of bedding was also a customer of books. And that grandmother reacted differently for the different product lines. So they were smart enough to keep their segments not only by value behavior, but also by needs. So how they responded to their buying books as compared to buying clothing or whatever, each of them had different calls to action, and they tested that all just repeatedly. And again, they didn't confuse buying behavior with loyalty behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so we're I love talking about this, but we're going to have to land the plane on this topic. And I want to bring you back for another topic, which is something that we also cover in the course material in my course, this idea of customer engagement and loyalty around the life cycle. But I want to throw something out there and ask your opinion of what you think about this. And it's really just something I'm thinking about. You know, Joe Pyne wrote The Experience Economy, and he's got a new concept that he is sharing called customering, saying it's going to replace marketing. And the idea there is there aren't real segments, there are only customers. And my question to you is, as it may relate to loyalty programs, as we look to the future, as we think about AI and generative AI and the possibility, there's a case study in our textbook that has to do with this company in Taiwan. It's a supermarket that has the ability to look at fine-tuned data of specific customer interactions to the point where they almost customize the loyalty program at the customer level, not even at the segment level. So my question to you is, where do you see this going?
In 1999, when I was a partner at Peppers and Rogers, one-to-one marketing, we could do all of that. We can do that all today. It is just amazing to me that we have had the ability to do one-to-one marketing for all of these years, and yet we haven't. And the bottom line comes into the fact that the cost still to have different images and different calls to action and different product suites doesn't necessarily work. It doesn't work when you have a limited number of products, right? So if you're Lexus and you have 10 products, right? Doing it one-to-one in anything other than the service line, it again erodes your nectar, right? So I have always been amazed that companies have not done this. And it'll be really interesting with AI, which is just like the difference between chatbots and the marketing orchestration and then journey orchestration, right? Companies only have the mindset to deal with four or five different groups of one-to-many. And it is a limitation that I've never understood. The companies who actually do a better job of that drop 5 to 8% on their bottom line within 2 months of doing what you suggest. And yet we don't do it. It's a mystery.
It will be interesting to see if that changes with the advent of what's available today.
Yeah, yeah. It's truly, the tools have been there for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet we still, companies are just not doing it. And I don't know, marketing has changed a lot. In 2000, when the last major downturn happened and they got decimated, and then, you know, individual mobile and web and all sorts of different channels started taking the lead. You know, again, the opportunity was there to do it even by channel. And yet people didn't do it, right? So it's very interesting. And digital transformation is always something. Don't get me on that subject, because not everybody wants to be digitally transformed. Right. I actually like going by the bank and handing them my checks at the end of the week that we've made money, because it gives me an emotional lift. Right. Doing it on a mobile, I'll do it when I'm traveling, but it's not the same. So as I said in the beginning, we are feeling creatures who can think.
Well said. What a great way to end it on. Great conversation around loyalty programs. We may be thinking about it or not. It's in our subconscious maybe as consumers, but from a company standpoint, we just talked about the importance of really being thoughtful and strategic about our approach and understanding what it is and what it isn't. And I think we did a great job of delineating it. Thanks to you, Valerie. Thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'd like to ask you a favor. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content, and I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those on my website at empoweredcx.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.